All right, we are going live now, and we're here with Shiten. I know I'm going to butcher this. Noor.
Yes, you got okay. You got pretty good. It's Japan Noir, so. But thank you for you know.
I knew I was going to goof it.
Okay.
Shiten is a studier of the cryptids, which is, you know, like the lake monsters and the Bigfoots and, you know, dragons and stuff like that, you know. And she has, as of late, been researching lizard people, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay.
But some people actually know them as reptilians.
Or dragonoids.
Or dragons. Yeah. So, like I was telling you before, one of the first questions I ask is, what got you interested in this particular field so that you have devoted a lot of your time to it?
Well, I would say my first interest in it began when it was between 9 and 10, and like a lot of American families, my family liked to go camping as our summer vacation. And we would do this quite often, but there was a campground here in Michigan called, I believe it was called Crystal Lake. And at this campground, now you have to remember this is a 9-year-old child who has a younger brother, an older brother, and two parents. They had an alligator in a dog kennel living there. And so I never wanted to go fishing out in the boat because obviously alligators live there. You know, thinking 9-year-old child. So they decided, the people who run the camp, that for family movie night that weekend, they were going to show the Patterson-Gimlin film and The Legend of Boggy Creek. And so you have these adults sitting there watching it, and you have these children sitting there watching it. And I'm like, oh, shit, these things are in the woods. I remember leaving the movie, you know, the area, the pavilion that they were having moved and going to use a restroom, and then not wanting to leave the restroom because obviously Bigfoot was out there and was going to grab anybody who walked through the campground. So these two older ladies were nice enough to escort me back to the camper. And of course, I can't remember if my brother did it or my parents did it or what, but it was one of those things that there was some explaining going on. And it was just like, no, if alligators can live here, then Bigfoot can live here. And so that really, I think, started my interest into the cryptozoology and then the paranormal. I've had different things happen throughout my younger years that pretty much told me that there was something else besides the world that we see around us.
Hey, Chris.
Hi, Chris.
So, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. I can understand being, you know, a young child and having stuff like that. You know, I'm the youngest of 7, and my older siblings used to lock me in dark closets.
Oh, my.
And tell me that there was all kinds of stuff in there that was going to get me. So I can kind of relate. So, with your research that you've been doing for the last 6 months on these, what kind of interesting things did you find out?
Well, a lot of people, the first report that they look at is the one in 1988 where Christopher Davis, the young teenage boy, was changing his car tire near Spit or Swamps. And he hears these footsteps running up behind him. And as he looks behind him, according to him, 25 yards away was this reptilian creature running towards him. So he was able to run around, get into the driver's side door of the car, lock the doors, and then the creature was upon his car and was yanking at the door handles and eventually got on top of the car. So he started driving away and through some twists and turns, he was able to get to slide off the car. And when he got home, he made he told his parents about what happened. So then he makes a report with Sheriff Truesdale, and then it kind of becomes a snowball event where other people start seeing the Lizard Man. They document damage done to his car. But it's interesting to note that 150 years before that, there was a similar creature report in the area, except for that creature was 9 feet tall, and the one that attacked Christopher Davis was an estimated 7 feet tall. So that kind of piqued my interest. And then there was reports of people being attacked along the Miami River in Evansville, Indiana. So you have not only land-based lizard people attacks, but also underwater. So these, and then there's people who say that they, they've seen them in their houses or lurking along alley streets. So different people are making different reports, and these are much different than a Bigfoot report or a Dogman report, because they're not reporting a furry appearance. They're reporting reptilian. So scales, lizard type skin, alligator type skin.
Right. Okay. So with that though, no, I watched your thing from the Paracon.
Yeah.
And there were some things you were talking about, the possibility of maybe a dinosaur that has evolved.
Yeah. So the dinosaur species that we're focusing on with that aspect is one called the Troodont, which was similar in body style to like a raptor or
kind of looked like a raptor.
Medium sized theropod. It's standing upright, but the idea is that if the Troodont had not gone extinct, which we put a question mark there because is anything really extinct? If it continued evolving, it would have continued to become more upright and humanoid in shape. And its brain was actually the largest of all the dinosaurs its size. So it not only had this big brain and was showing aspects of intelligence, but we all know that everything learns from watching the environment around us. Humans learn how to do things from watching other humans. Dogs do it. Birds do it. So as soon as one creature invents a new technique or something new to help make life easier, everything else picks up on it. And I can only assume that this would have been true of the Troodonts, and they would have eventually been pretty much on the same level as a human being, with intelligence and being able to, use different tools and aspects like that.
Right. So what parts of the country did you find that were reporting these, or was it all over the world?
There are reports that come from all over the world. Here in the United States, North Carolina, South Carolina, people had reported along the Swampway, stuff like that. Anywhere that there was marshy, swampy areas, lizard-type creatures. Evansville, Indiana, along the Little Miami River, there's a report of there's a woman with her friend and her children. She went out on an inner tube, and something proceeded to start pulling her underneath the water, and she could feel clawed hand pulling her under, and when she finally got out of the water, they noticed a hand-type bruise around her leg. But the interesting thing was she had this blackish-green residue on her leg that would not, they couldn't clean it off with any type of cleaner. So it stayed on her leg for up to a week.
Interesting.
California, Arizona, the West Coast have different reports of different lizard people populations going back to Native American story legends. That live in, all along the West Coast.
Right, right. Now, you mentioned Arizona there, and then New Mexico's right next to Arizona. And then the Indian legends, did they ever have anything talked about like, creatures that lived in the earth that came up?
Yeah.
That looked like that?
Yeah, so the Hopi Indian tribe actually had a storytelling legend. Now, you have to understand the Native American, until recently, nothing was written down. It was all a spoken tradition of history. So they had a story, the Hopi Indians had a story of these lizard people populations that lived along the West Coast, and they were known for collecting and hoarding gold, which, of course, piqued anybody's attention who, you know, is interested in gold and stuff like that. You know, they want that possibility of treasure hunting. But Keith Greenleaf, he ended up telling this story to a gentleman who went back to L.A., and he was able to convince the city council in L.A. Now, this was back before modern times. But he ended up digging like a 150-foot trench into the ground, because he, with this technology that he had developed, he said that there was this great big gold deposit 200 feet down into the ground. And so they dug and they dug, but they never really got anything. And so it kind of dismissed that legend, particularly of, you know, the lizard people being gold collectors, because they were never able to cash in on the gold. But, you know, it still remains a Native American legend of the Hopi tribe to this day.
Right. Well, you know, shiny objects. it attracts a lot of attention.
Well, that's probably the biggest, you know, when a legend or a story becomes kind of debunked or, you know, kind of disappointing. It's like the biggest disappointing, because you're expecting to find that gold.
In California, Nevada, you know, Arizona, they do have lots of different gold mines, silver mines, turquoise mines.
And legends of this guy hid their gold here, this guy hid their gold here, you know, because of the old West, you know, you had all the bank robberies and, you know, guys finding a mysterious gold mine, and they got the map for it, and they're the only ones. And oh, now we're gonna go search for. I watch those shows. I'm a big fan of Josh Gates, you know, Expedition Unknown. So I've seen a lot of his gold. Yeah, that way.
The behind the Superstition Mountains is that there's tons of gold buried up there. You just have to find the entrance.
There's
10 other people waiting there for you.
Yeah, there is one legend about the Superstitious Mountains that isn't well known, and that is that there's supposedly Aztecian gold in those mountains, and that the people that have actually went looking for it normally wind up being missing.
Yeah. Yeah, that brings that whole cursed locations and stuff into play, and that's pretty much why the Superstition Mountains got that name. Was it had that reputation. If you went to go looking, you probably weren't going to come back.
Right. There's also a legend that inside in the mountains, somewhere in there, the reason the people are disappearing is because if you've watched Ancient Aliens, is what is called a gate of the gods.
Mm-hmm.
It's a teleportation device, basically, that will transport you to a different planet.
Yeah.
And that's why they disappear. They go through this and they don't know how to get back. That's one of the legends that's surrounding that too. So, what is the determination that you came up with? Do you believe that possibly the lizard people or reptilians are an extinct species? Or do you think that maybe they actually originated as an alien race that has came and colonized part of the Earth?
So I have my theories on it, and there's evidence on both sides, because if you look at the ancient alien aspect of it being one of the reptoids or draconians, there's evidence through ancient human civilizations that they were coming in contact with something that had, was humanoid and had lizard type features, because they took the time to etch it into stone. And, you know, this is what we saw. This was the god that we worshipped, with Sobek being from ancient Egypt, the crocodile headed god.
The crocodilian god of Egypt, Sobek.
Yep. And then you've got Quetzalcoatl, of the you know, the Aztecs. You have NK of ancient Sumerians. You have all these different lizard type beings that these ancient cultures, either they had heard about them or they had an eyewitness sighting. And because it made such an impression on them, they gave them the level status of God. This led up to your God, you know? So to me, if you're going to make something a God, then they had to exhibit or show some type of remarkable abilities that you had no explanation for, and you attributed those special powers to that one being. So in order for the, you know, the ancient civilizations to document this with carving it into stone, there had to have been influence there. So, you know, we can look at it from both sides of, okay, were the Tuodonts evolving up? And then here comes a alien reptilian race that establishes itself on Earth, and they realize they can't breed with humans, so they breed with the Tuodonts. And now you have this highly intelligent race that kind of sets up, you know, shop here on Earth, and know where the resources are, where the oil is, where the diamonds are, where the fossil fuels are, and can, you know, take advantage of it.
That's a possibility too. But if you're going to go on to the alien side of it, you also got to look at it in this aspect. According to the ancient Sumerian writings, the Anunnaki were the first alien race to inhabit or to visit this planet. And we are a product of a hybridization of the Anunnaki and an indigenous species here. Now, what if we were not the first or the only? What if at the time of the Tuodon that was still here, that the Anunnaki came to this planet? Because their primary thing, again, we're going right back to gold. That's what they were looking for and what they wanted. And it has something to do with being able to maintain life on their planet. So they took their DNA, spliced it with an indigenous species on this planet, creating us. Now, what if they did the same thing with the reptilian?
Yeah.
What if they took the Tuodon and actually spliced their DNA with the Tuodon? Because you got to think, now their technology is going to be so far more advanced than we are, or that anything here. So they would be able to merge the DNAs probably and be able to create a different species.
And you have to look at it also too. The humans are much more capable of being heavy labor. You know that the ancient Egyptians built the pyramids. Now, could you see reptilian creatures trying to do that with very narrow bones and not much flesh on their bodies? I don't think so, but they'd be good at observing us and watching us and kind of influencing us, saying, hey, this is the best way to bury your dead, or to show respect to the dead, or, you know, this is the best way to get these resources. Now, go ahead and do it, and we'll, you know, patch up that sick job as you do the work, and we'll come, you know, tell you if it's good enough or not.
Right.
So I can see that being another working scenario too.
See, maybe we were the labor and they were the overseers.
Yes.
That could be possible there too. Because, you know, the humans are kind of an interesting species, because we have some characteristics in common with some of the primates, or the primates have some in common with us. See, we, the humans and the chimpanzees, only have two chromosome differences in the in their DNA makeup. The humans have two chromosomes less than the chimpanzees.
Right.
The chimpanzees and a subspecies of the chimpanzees and humans are the only primate species that will kill for fun.
Yes.
The other primate species will not kill for fun. The orangutan and the macaques and the gorillas, they won't kill for fun, but they do punish. They do punish the wrongdoers in their groups, but they will not kill them just because they can kill them.
Oh, yeah. Chimpanzees will go to war with other groups of chimpanzees.
Yes, they will.
And, kill off, and just for the territory, kill off all the males and half the females and just keep the young breeding females in their group. Mm-hmm. And they do it without any, you know, issue at all.
That kind of makes me think that if... thank you, Tom. He knows what I'm talking about because I've actually covered this before. The bonobo. So,
yeah.
They're a subspecies of chimpanzee. They're a little bit smaller, I believe. But the whole thing is it all revolves around the Sumerian writings about the Anunnaki. So that also makes me think with some of the research that you've done and the things that you've found out that I've heard on your little on your Paracon thing and then seen on your website that that it's a possibility that that the reptilians could be a product of a genetic splicing of the Anunnaki and a possible relative of the dinosaur.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because if you think about it, humans, you know, we're an interesting creature ourselves because we're pretty much hairless except for hair on our head.
We had a tail once.
Yes. And some human infants are still born with that primordial tail removed, but some people are still born with it.
Well, that's why you got that tailbone back there. And it hurts when you hit it.
Yes, it does.
Yeah,
we're land on it.
And if you just look at just human behavior, you know, some of our actions are very territorial and very primeval. And this is a throwback to something, you know, before us of this. Because, you know, as human beings, we should be able to communicate and discuss things, but. At the drop of the hat, we're arguing over, or white and gold.
Yeah, that's why I feel that the men should be the ones that do all the work and take care of the family, and the women should be the ones that take care of the finances and take care of the communications and run things because they're the ones that have more of a thinking brain than the man, because most men,
their brains are in
their
pants.
For some reason, we revert back to the primeval or primordial activities that are in our brains. I understand, Joe. But I'm just saying, you know, we as a species have a lot of learning to do. We honestly
do.
So. You're a jerk. Talking to him, by the way. All right, Joe, anything that you got for her?
No, I was just saying that, you know, that alien theory can apply to a lot of different cryptids that, because we've came up with that. Well, we've investigated, sort of done our research on some of that theory and you know, I know you're familiar because you're from Michigan. You're familiar with the Michigan Dogman. We have the Beast of Bray, and we have the Beast of Bray Road, which is supposed to be a pretty similar cryptid.
Yeah.
Okay. So we went down there to this farm that was in Linda Godfrey's book, and she wrote about the guy. We went down there, and we haven't really published any of our findings yet because we had planned on going back for an overnight, and that kind of got canceled and put on the back burner for now. But the thing was, is it like with Bigfoot, there's no, the only thing you find is like the cats, the prints. You don't find any DNA, any scat, any hair, any fur that could be traced and proven to be Bigfoot or this beast of Bray Road. And it seems like, because we got a lot more than we bargained for when we showed up and met this gentleman that owns the land, that UFOs tend to appear shortly before and or after this creature tends to appear in the sky. Have you come across stories like that where the UFO will appear like before they see a Bigfoot or orbs in the sky or something of that nature?
The best case I think of that was it happened in a state park near Lake Erie, or actually on Lake Erie, and the group that it happened to, they parked on the sand, which was kind of dumb, but their car ended up getting stuck. So the police were there, you know, making sure that the park was clear, said, okay, we're gonna circle the park, make sure everybody's out, and then we'll come back and help you. And the people said, okay. So as they're waiting, they see this orb of light coming in close and going into the woods, and they're like, that's a UFO. And so, of course, the guys go to investigate it, leaving the women and the kids there at the car. Well, while the men are gone, this creature comes up and is hitting on the car. And finally, they start blaring on the horn, trying to get people to come and help them. So the men come back and the police come back, and they're finding these triangular-shaped footprints going back into the woods. So they get the car unstuck, and it goes off on its way. And the next day, the people are immediately visited by the U.S. military and the men in black, so to say. And by the time they're like retelling the story, the evidence at the location has been totally removed. And so, but it was a documented case of these people saw this UFO, and they saw what they thought was a Bigfoot type creature. Unfortunately, the footprints were not Bigfootish; they were triangular in shape, and they led to the car and then to the spaceship, or the location where they said that the spaceship had landed. So there is a documentation of there being UFOs and a Bigfoot-like creature spotted in the same locations.
Interesting.
Yeah, I just think because of all the theories that surround the cryptids, they fascinate me. Because, you know, you've got that, and then with Bigfoot, you've got some of the Native American stories that go with those. And they've got different theories and what Bigfoot is, you know. And I find that the most fascinating. There's too many theories, and none of them can be proven
right
one way or the other.
And a theory that I've had for a long time is if alien races have been observing the human race for a while, they kind of know how we are as humans. But what is to stop them from communicating with other higher life forms like elephants, like whales, like Bigfoot, dogmen, and the replies that they're going to get from them on how are things going on planet Earth is going to be much different than what a human would give.
Or the most intelligent species on this planet, who is actually more intelligent than us, the dolphin.
Yes.
Believe it or not, the dolphin is way more intelligent than a human.
Yes. And so if they're communicating with these other species that have a different point of view than what human beings do, then any alien race that's communicating with them is going to get a much different picture of how human beings are than what a human being would probably say.
Well, I have a theory about aliens. I think anytime they fly it through our solar system, they roll their windows up and lock their fucking doors and say, we ain't going to even go near those idiots.
Yeah, I think they have some definite cloaking technology, and they
uncloak. Oh, they do. They do.
They uncloak just to be like, ha ha, you know, what are you going to get face off? I can see that too.
Well, you know, it's just, I mean, it there's evidence out there claiming or showing that that aliens do exist. I mean, look at the technologies
ignorant and stupid to think that we're the only life form in this universe, you know.
Well, that's my saying, Joe, that other planets can't have
some other life form.
Yeah, that's kind of my saying. I tell people who try to tell me that aliens don't exist, I'm like, well, you know, that's pretty damn naive of you, because it takes a lot of naivety to believe that there is nothing out there that can be even smarter than us, because we are actually one of the youngest planetary systems in this galaxy of ours.
You got somebody to argue with you now.
Oh, whatever.
I'm calling it fake news. Fact checker here.
Nope. Dolphins are way smarter than humans, Tom. They are very much so. But, you know, if you look at it, okay, where we're located in our galaxy, in our Milky Way, we are on the outer edges of the Milky Way. And everything in the center, or everything closer to the center, or from the center out, has formed in that manner. So the closer you get to the center of the Milky Way, the older the materials and the older the planets and the solar systems and the stars and everything are. So for us to sit here and say, we're the only intelligence in this galaxy, in this universe, because God made us. Okay, who made God?
Yeah, ancient civilizations.
Okay.
Yeah, because
like I told you before, I'm a out of practice Wiccan. I've used to be into the Wiccan faith and other things. So, but I'm more today. I'm more what you would call an agnostic, not an atheist. I do believe in a higher power. I do believe that we have had help over the millennia that we've been on this planet. But I still don't believe that we are a true indigenous species of this planet. I believe we are. Our race is a hybrid. So that's my take on some of it. So in order for us to actually say that there is no other intelligence, that we are the only intelligence, that we are the smartest that there's ever going to be, is extremely naive, because of the fact of how young we are as a species, how small we are, like the grains of sand on a beach compared to this galaxy, and not just this galaxy, but this galaxy within this mass universe that we have.
Yeah, because we're not even one of the biggest planets in the solar system. We're actually middle of the road. There's bigger planets out there. And,
yes, there are.
We can only hypothesize of what's living on those other planets, but, you know, we think we're such an intelligent species, and yet half of us can't wear a mask when we go out to avoid
COVID. Exactly.
Half of the human race is getting contaminated, and another portion of that race, of that population, is being killed by a virus that if we wear a mask and wash our hands and use hand sanitizer, we can avoid, and yet we're not.
Yeah.
So, if we're
this whole stuff could have been avoided in the beginning.
Yeah,
well, not avoided, but we would have probably had about 10, you know, only 10% of this.
No,
if everybody would have followed those rules from the beginning,
been avoided, because if they would have,
you would have still had probably deaths and stuff. That's just the way disease goes.
I understand that, but.
But the numbers wouldn't
Your numbers wouldn't be 215,000 people be about 10% dead because of it, and over 7 million people infected with it.
No.
What you would have is a micro percent, a very micro percent, not even a full percent of that.
Yeah, so if we're looking at other planets, and you know, there's a possibility of viruses, contaminants being on other planets that could easily, if they made their way, you know, back to Earth, wipe out the whole entire, you know, human race because of the way we are as a community and as a functioning creature. Mm-hmm. We interact with each other all day long, and if this, you know, if we were to be exposed to an alien virus, you know, I would think that it would be very rapid exposure to it.
Yep.
I think most of them just look at us and say, hey, they just try to kill each other all the time. Why bother?
That's,
we don't want them here. We don't want them near us. Point. You know, we're a peaceful race, you know.
Well, I guess there are some of them out there.
If you listen to
some of the theorists on it, there's about 9 different races of aliens that we know of, and there are part of them that are really good, nice race that wants to try and help us help us evolve in our developments. And then there's others that want to exploit us and take advantage of us and use us for possibly food or whatever.
Cattle.
And, for some of them, we could be like cattle. And you never know. That might be, you know, maybe some of the Bible is true.
Or slavery okay? to dig
maybe
up all their gold.
No, think about this. Maybe some of the Bible is true. Because in Revelations about the... About the second coming of Christ, it says that all the faithful will disappear from the earth, and the only ones left will be the sinners. What if that is predicting a calling? What if that is saying that here's this race of aliens that is coming to call their creation on this earth? What if the Anunnaki are coming back and we were actually not just bred for being labor for them and digging gold and building monuments? What if we were actually bred as being, I don't know, food for them? And they're coming to take back some of their food.
Yeah, interesting.
That's a scary thought.
Yes, I know it is. And how are we going to stop them? Our technology isn't that high. We don't have that type of technology.
The first would be to do a nuclear launch against them, and then you're killing half the planet anyways because of the nuclear fallout. So,
yep.
Exactly. And to say that nuclear energy would even, you know, a nuclear bomb would even...
See, that's the reason I don't think they want to mess with us, is because we're too busy trying to kill each other.
That's a possibility, too.
And they're going, well, they're going to wipe themselves out. You know, maybe somebody will intervene in this whole world of become peaceful, but I mean, that's just wishful thinking.
I don't see it happening.
But now, how much of this, like when it comes to cryptids, how much do you think might be misidentification? Because I think the Beasts of Bray Road could be a lot of.
I think definitely with Bigfoot and Dogman sightings that there's a lot of misidentification, because realistically, you're only getting maybe a 30-second, you know, visual sighting of this creature as it's either running across the road or running down a trail. And a lot of people, they take in the color of the creature, the size of the creature, and that's about it. So your reports are, well, it was this 7-foot tall, bigger than me creature that, you know, was brown in color. Sometimes they don't, you know, see the whole profile of the bite. So they don't see if there's a tail. They don't see if there's a snout. They don't see if there's, you know, these ears sticking up on it. They just see the mass of the creature and the color. So I think, you know, we could be looking at a lot of misidentifications with some of these Bigfoot reports actually being dog found, and people just not knowing that that's what they're seeing because of either the way that the creature moved in front of them or the position of how they were able to see it. So I think that there is the potential there for a lot of misidentification with the Bigfoot and with the Dogman.
I got my theories about that Dogman. I've been down to Bray Road, the so-called famous Bray Road here in Wisconsin, and we went down there at night. And I took some psychology courses and stuff, and I can easily see, because of how dark that road is, how long it is, and how quiet it can be out there. The mind can play tricks with you. And you see the wolf sitting there eating roadkill, and then it looks up at you, and the headlights hit the eyes, and they glow like they do. I can easily see the mind playing tricks on you. Wisconsin's got two things, like Michigan probably does, wolves, coyotes.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's also the possibility, because, you know, we always think that we know it all as a race. Okay, we know everything about this planet as a race. We're sure that this went extinct many years ago. But yet, here this stuff that went extinct, it's washing up on the shores of Japan or...
Yep.
Appearing yep. here in some jungle in Africa or something. And what's to say that what people might not be seeing is could be that dire wolf.
Right. Because just because they're, you know, you can have a breeding population of them
and then
they slowly die off, but they've probably been breeding with the timber wolves and other types of wolves. So you have that bloodline in there.
Hybrids. I was just going to say, I saw a hybrid. I saw a picture of a hybrid once. And I was just shocked. I can't remember the percentages, but it was husky, Siberian husky, German shepherd, and wolf.
Uh-huh.
Timber wolf. And that was one big dog.
Oh, yeah.
It was bigger than your average wolf. And I've seen wolves up close, you know, because we got in Wisconsin, we've got this preservation area that they have in Poinette, and you can go there, and they've got a pack of wolves mm-hmm. there. And you could, and some of those wolves are hybrids, you know, that people had as pets. Mm-hmm. Everything in there lived in Wisconsin or was native to Wisconsin. Okay. And they've even got the cougar there.
Yeah.
You know, or mountain lion. It depends on, I guess, what part of country you're from, what you call it. But same cat.
Either or is the same damn cat.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. When people talk about the panther, which doesn't exist, okay, there's no such thing, right? It's either a jaguar. They say it's either a jaguar or a leopard with... that melanoma disease, okay, that causes it to be a black panther. What's to say that can happen to a cougar?
Well, actually, I think it can, because Chris Sacharach from Finding Bigfoot, I've interviewed him before, and he said one of the coolest sightings he had was they thought it was they were driving past a dog until they really looked, and it was actually a black cougar that they were driving past.
Right.
And out in the farmlands of Illinois, and they were like, you know, that shouldn't exist, but it does.
And then again, when you get the crossbreeding involved.
Yes.
Okay, like here, look at your normal canines and your normal house cats.
Yep.
They can almost be any color. Doesn't matter the breed. I never saw like a pure white, and my dog's not an albino by any means, but I've never seen a full-bred Siberian husky with her colors.
Mm-hmm.
She's almost pure white. She's got just a little bit of a black stripe down her back and a little bit of a mask. That's it.
Right. So, you know. Yeah. So for example, so let's say that for some weird reason, every poodle on earth were to disappear. Well, the poodle is not really extinct because we have doodles. We have labradoodles. We have, you know, golden doodles. If you breed enough of those, you know, together, eventually you do recreate the poodle. And then you get different colors added in. So because of all these hybrids and crossbreeds, nothing truly goes extinct nowadays. It's just... you have to look for the bloodlines in a similar species and see if there's has been any crossbreeding going on between them.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure that, you know, that could be a lot of, you know, causes for the dog man creature, you know, in a way, because I've seen, you know, what some people think might have been a dire wolf videos, or they could have been hoaxes or fakes or whatever, but I've looked up this dire wolf. That's one big dog.
Yeah.
You know.
And if a basic canine can learn to walk on its legs.
Right.
Then it's not out of the question that a dog man could be both bipedal and quadruped. It could walk on its legs to reach higher things. But then for speed and escape, it can drop down onto all fours and get away from you.
Yeah.
Now, in Africa, they have the jackal.
Yes.
Or the hyena. That is a canine species. And I have a friend that I was friends with for a while back, in a few years back.
I didn't think you had friends.
Who's from Africa. He told me some stories about...
I remember that dude.
Mufasa.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I remember you telling me about that.
He was telling me stories about hyenas that would come into the villages. He said these damn things would literally stand on their hind legs in the shadows to ambush people.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And it wasn't just, get up on your hind legs and then ambush. It was, they would literally stand on their hind legs in the shadows for hours, waiting for people to, or the person to come by, so they can ambush them.
Yeah, it's kind of scary when you look at the intelligence of some species and their problem-solving abilities. Yep. And how they learn to, like, predict human behavior. Like, you probably can't see him. He's in the tank behind me. I have what's called a tree lizard. And he has learned that if I lift up the top of his cage high enough, he can escape. So now I have to slide a piece of mesh in before I raise up the lid so I can drop in his crickets or whatever, because he will try to escape. Now, he has a totally different, you know, processor than my leopard gecko, who's just as calm as ever and was like, hey, she's going to feed me. Cool. I'm just going to get ready to grab him. And he has no qualm. He doesn't want to escape. He doesn't see the need to. But the tree dragon is totally different. He's like, ha-ha, I'm going to get out.
All right. Right. Now, see, that right there, now you're talking about the lizard species and stuff that we have on this planet, too.
Mm-hmm.
The chameleon.
Oh, yes.
Okay. The chameleon can change its colors. It mm-hmm. can change its patterns. It can actually, if I'm not mistaken, can have 2, 3, 4 different colors mm-hmm. on its body at one time.
Yeah, they can blend in so well you wouldn't even know they were there.
What if our reptilians have that ability to where they can blend yeah. into their environment? And that's why it's so surprising when you wind up seeing him. Because you didn't see them originally yeah. because of the camouflage that they were using.
Well, it's interesting. You know, we tend to dismiss the intelligence of reptiles. You know, thinking that they're dim-witted, but
they do octopus have an intelligence. And squid,
octopus and squid, who do coloration, and we know they're hyper intelligent because they can figure out how to open up a bottle and get things out. They can escape any, you know, enclosure you put them in mm-hmm. and opening the size of a quarter. So
as long as their beak will fit.
Yes. So why do we attribute intelligence to one species that can do all that with another species that is more deliberate in their thought patterns of, okay, I'm going to watch what the human does and then make my behaviors from there, but can still, you know, change colors and stuff like that. Why do we dismiss the intelligence of that? So as humans, we have some evolving to do with how we discern intelligence and stuff like that with other species.
Oh, definitely. Now, you brought up octopus.
Yeah.
I seen an article the other day
uh-oh.
where scientists are actually saying that octopus may not be an indigenous species to the planet Earth.
I've
heard that they too. May actually be alien.
Yeah, and it has to do with their blood, because there's certain components of their blood that is totally alien to this world. So you have to wonder, when one of these meteors crashed in the past, back in the dinosaur times, maybe it was carrying some type of life form on it that, once it got into our water system, helped it evolve into the cephalopods and into octopuses and squids.
That is a very good possibility. Yeah, not just meteors.
Microorganism.
Yeah.
Yes. That was like carried on the rock, and it could have just landed in the ocean. And then
Hang on. Here's something to think about. You know that our planet, when it was formed from molten rock.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Where'd the water come from?
The atmosphere.
Where'd the water come from?
I'm thinking atmosphere.
No. The water came from comets. What are comets made out of?
Oh, yes. Ice.
Ice.
Exactly. Yeah. What if, like you said,
comes from the atmosphere?
What if that was what brought the octopus or the cephalopods here?
Yeah, if you look,
maybe
if
they
look,
were frozen inside the ice of a comet that crashed on
survived
the Earth.
And then they survived the travel.
Depending on the size of the comet. And the amount of meltage that came through the atmosphere, and actually early Earth didn't have a heavy atmosphere, so therefore it wouldn't cause the friction that it does today, so therefore it wouldn't melt as fast or anything. So what are the odds there?
That's probably a better
odds. Could be it.
That's probably
it. You can go from just having these trilobites and these sea scorpions to plesiosaurs and armor-plated fish and sharks. You have to wonder where they all were introduced in the timeline. So something had to bring that DNA here to Earth and unleash it.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the whole thing. I always had, I love science. I absolutely love science. I am awesome in math and science. I've always had an interest in it, but I've always had a questioning mind on how can you say that every species on this planet, okay, Darwinian's theory of evolution, but every species on this planet developed from just one microbe.
Right.
Or one particular, species of microbe. It doesn't make sense to me. How is it that would turn into, okay, your sea scorpions, and then those would split off and one develop into like a fish, or one develop into, the horseshoe crab or something, something like that. We had to have had some sort of event happen on this planet that actually placed that DNA here. And that would be what I would consider would be the possible microbes or the possible building blocks for these particular life forms in the comets as they came through.
That's a good point.
Yep. So, yeah, sorry, we got off on different stuff. See, that's what happens with us. We'll start off on your main topic and then we'll go off on different directions.
But that's also so much fun. I mean, it's always fun to, talk about this stuff.
That's the thing. That's what happens when you're having fun.
Well, one of the things too, if you think about it, there are at least two moons that circle two different planets in our solar system that are finally NASA got their heads out of their butts and actually said that they are possible candidates of holding an extraterrestrial life form. And one of them is Jupiter's moon Io.
Mm-hmm.
Or not Io, but Europa.
Europa.
Europa is, it's basically a water planet with an ice sheet around it. So, and I think Io was the other one, but that's Saturn's moon. But yeah, I mean, you know, you think about it. Those are a possibility because the planets that they're circling are so big that put such a gravitational pull. It keeps the water inside of them liquid. And the only reason it freezes on the outside is because of the you know, they don't really have an atmosphere, so they're exposed to the space, and you know, space is like 300 and something below, so it freezes.
Mm-hmm.
I've always thought that there's a possibility of life on other planets in our solar system because of the fact that, you know, we just cannot be the only living planet.
Right.
No, that just doesn't make sense.
No, with as many planets as there are out there and as many, you know, planetoids and moons and solar systems and stars. I mean, look at all the damn stars.
Oh, yeah.
It just does not add up. So is there anything else that you want to share with us?
Well, I got one more question.
Okay, then throw it.
This is to help promoter. You have books, right?
Oh, yeah.
Can they be found on Amazon?
Yes, all my titles can be found on Amazon. You just look for my name, S-H-E-T-A-N.
That's scroll across the bottom right there.
Yep. And that, if you type that in on Amazon, you'll find all the books that I've written. For cryptozoology, I have three. The first one is Lake Monsters and Odd Creatures of the Great Lakes. Second one is Mothman and Other Flying Creatures of the Midwest. And then the third is the beginning of my children's book series, which features my little 7-pound miniature pincher. She goes on monster hunting expeditions around our yard. And the first one is she's trying to catch Bigfoot because he crashes her tea party. And it's all live photography of her in these little costumes with a Bigfoot in the background, you know, looking out through the trees and bushes and stuff like that. So. Yeah, she built
that's cute.
To catch them, and
that's pretty cute. So, is there anything else that you'd like to add?
If you want to find out more, or you want to join some of my groups, I run the Great Lakes Center for Unexplained Events and Phenomenon. That's a Facebook group. There's also the Michigan chapter of the North American Dogman Project. And my podcast is Into the Liminal Abyss Paranormal Podcast. You can find that on YouTube. I also have a page for it on Facebook.
Yeah, be sure to subscribe to her on YouTube.
Yep. Yes. And you can find me on social media under Chetan Noir.
Cool.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's another thing. I guess we're going to have you back someday and talk about lake monsters.
No problem. Oh, I love talking about lake monsters.
Yeah, supposedly there's a lake monster in Lake Mendota.
Yeah. Actually, there's a couple that I have reports of. Wisconsin has a lot of lake monster reports.
Okay. Yeah, but I know what they are.
There's one out there.
Or at least I have a theory of what they are.
Well, we'll have to talk and save that for next time.
Okay.
So, okay, we are out of here.
Well, you can stick around, too, if you want.
Stay safe, everyone.
Till next time.
We'll
and mask up.
Friday
man,
night.
Mask up.
No guests yet, but we'll see you Friday night. Who knows what'll happen.
Bye.